Throughout a continuous history of over 4,000 years. added to that are modern technological characteristics. That comes from the German practice of Baubiologie, and that's a practice of the biology of buildings. And so in Germany, there have been a whole core of people developing to do personal environmental surveys for homeowners and businesses. And then on top of that are some more modern things, because Baubiologie dates back about 100 years. And now we have, from America, research on geobiology and on alternative ways to change the energies of living spaces, which is a very exciting area.
Changing the living spaces of an environment, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, how does one know if they've got a good or bad environment?
Health.
Ah, okay. So if they're feeling great, chances are the environment is supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're having some issues, physical, mental, emotional issues, there could likely be some things that could be supported by environmental changes. Is that what I'm understanding?
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot to it. A lot of things are brought into this because we find that many people may have, like you say, mental issues, and that's a real, real big problem, especially in America, where designs just tell people, hey, you're not important, you're not worthy of anything, and the design itself can a lot of times change somebody's life right there.
I guess over the years, can you share a story or two, perhaps, of the people you worked with and some of the changes that happened for them? They give their real names,
Yeah, I can do that. I mean, there have been many, many cases, so a few stand out. One was very material. It was a situation, a man who was an executive living up on top of a mountain, sharing that mountain with several broadcast antennas and radar antennas and all kinds of crazy stuff. He could see a radar dome from a couple of his windows of his house.
Ooh.
And his children were just constantly sick. Now, he was one of these people that we call, like in ancient Chinese medicine, a tiger person, meaning nothing really affects him. He just blows through everything.
Hmm.
But his children, on the other hand, 5 and 6 years old at the time, were just hardly ever out of bed. I went into that place, and there I was able to use my electronic equipment to survey all the waves that were roaring through that house, literally, and the levels there were higher than I'd seen almost anywhere else.
Wow.
And basically, we discussed two options. One was to put metal foil on the walls, which he probably could have afforded, but he chose the other option, which was to simply move to a house several miles away from that rat's nest of antennas.
Oh, I thought you were going to wrap the children in metal foil.
Well, yeah, some people have tried that, but it doesn't seem to work too well.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, for you loving parents out there, do not use the foil on your children.
Yeah, they just rustle around too much. They can't sneak up on anybody.
Okay, belling the cat there. Well, so that was the best option in terms of his choice. He could have stayed and taken some measures, but chose to move to an environment where there was less of the adverse energy.
Yeah.
And was there a difference for the kids when he
did? Oh, yeah. Right. You know, within a couple months of moving there, all their health problems cleared up, and they became quite normal.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a really satisfying case to work.
Oh.
And I had several cases where people were being knocked down by something very simple but fairly common, which was gas leaks in the house.
Oh.
Now, power companies, gas companies, usually will send somebody out to do a survey of that, and they usually find something, but I found my methods were a little more thorough, and I would often find leaks that hadn't been found by the gas company, and pipes could be tightened up or replaced, and again, the problems would clear up.
Now, this is intriguing. Normally, the natural gas has a chemical added to it, so it smells like a sulfur smell to it?
The chemical is called mercaptan, and it's a hydrogen sulfide smell.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's distinctive. However, sometimes leaks are so small that you don't really smell it. Or if you have other smells in the house, like pets or a lot of cooking, aromatic cooking, like Italian or Polish cuisine in particular, you won't pick it up.
Ah, okay. Because you know, you would think, how could someone not recognize they had a gas leak? But apparently there can be a small enough leak that it can cause health issues but still not be noticed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that was a common thing that I found in many cases. Now, I've also had cases where the pure design of a house was causing problems. I think the most memorable case, it's a little difficult to visualize on radio, but you would open the front door of this house, and the stairway to the basement was directly across to the other end of the living room, lined up exactly with the door, but going down from the other side. And then there was a very thin iron guardrail right by the front door so you wouldn't fall in the hole.
Oh, so the entrance to the basement was very close to the front door?
Yeah, yeah. And not just the entrance to the basement, but a big hole.
Oh.
That was the main feature.
Going down, ah.
Yeah. And the iron guardrail was, of course, sufficient to prevent any accidents. However, and I found this very interesting, the lady who was the main person in the house was a person I would call a Valkyrie, just really, really tough, very strong bone structure, just bulletproof person. And her knees were totally blown out.
Mm.
Yeah. And what I realized was that every time she walked in that front door, there'd be a little kind of a pause there, and her knees would lock up for a second because of that big hole.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an instinctive reaction, and anyone would do this, but in her case, partly because of her great strength, it wiped out her knees. The muscular structure was completely deteriorated.
Huh.
Yeah.
This was related to, like, the fear of falling down that thing? Or?
Exactly.
Okay. So even though it wasn't, you could see with the eye, that it wasn't really a hazard, but to the body itself, to the psyche, or I guess, I don't know if this was, you know, related to feng shui or something, but that it was representing a serious hazard that literally deteriorated an important part of the body, the knee area.
Yeah, and you see, this is something in feng shui that you run into a lot. I like to say there are three levels of feng shui. One level is pure superstition. These are just anecdotal things that have persisted for centuries. And they say, well, you know, it's just kind of a thing that people do. This is something that I tend to avoid. If I don't have scientific proof for why a certain phenomenon happens, I don't want to mess with it. And you will find within feng shui practices taught by a lot of people these days, a lot of spiritual material, which keys into ancient Chinese religion, and it's become superstition because people don't really understand where it comes from. Now,
pose a question, I guess, is the feng shui, is it a religion, or is it a science, or is it some of each, or what?
Exactly. And as practiced now, you find in China, of course, the predominant school is really astrologically based. Very few Americans practice that. It's quite complicated. And it also takes into account the fact that the Earth moves through various regions of space, and each region has its own characteristics as far as they've been able to determine. Well, this provides job security for feng shui consultants because every 7 years or so, you've got to come back to a house and readjust everything. So, like I say, that's the predominant Chinese practice, and there are very few Americans who are doing that. And then there are some people who've made feng shui into a religion more in recent years. There's a school called the Black Hat School, which pretty much does it that way. And this has, of course, caused problems for people of other religions who, for doctrinal reasons, don't want to mess with something from a foreign religion, and I can understand and respect that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, feng shui is a science. Now, we know there was a great natural disaster on this planet. It's in the mythology of every culture. And the Chinese apparently moved out into their area shortly after that disaster. And it's said in the ancient writings, the mountains were where the rivers should be, and the rivers were where the mountains should be, and it was just a complete mess. And there was a guy named Fu Xi who looked at all this and was perceptive enough to be able to figure out how to reconstruct the country, how to put things in the right places, so that Chinese civilization began.
Oh.
These observations were eventually codified, I believe, by his grandson into a document. The document went through a lot of translations and changes over the years, but stabilized early on as what we now know as the I Ching.
Mm.
The I Ching is precisely mathematical, and it is based on these observations by Fu Xi and a few other people along the line. And so, ultimately, the I Ching can be seen as a book of situations so that one can analyze any situation, figure out what it is, and figure out what to do. Now, of course, especially in the 1800s, the I Ching became a tool of divination.
Okay. Yeah,
I was wondering about this. Pardon?
I was wondering, because that's how I had thought of people doing the I Ching, of casting stones and kind of like getting a tarot reading or something.
Right. It's a shortcut when you do it that way. The way it was supposed to be studied, and even there in some of the original commentaries, is that you're supposed to study each of the 64 situations, combine that with understanding of elemental forces that was also part of the body of work that was attached to the I Ching, and then you would be able to determine through what you would call these days systems analysis exactly what to do about any situation.
Hmm.
But you had to memorize it, you see.
Wow. So you're a resource for some more in-depth. Now, do people contact you for consultations? Can you do that? Do they have to come to your place, or can you work with them on the phone?
I have a variety of ways I can work with people. The best way, of course, is just to go to their place. And I've done that literally from coast to coast and up into Canada. And once I even did a few surveys in Europe.
Hmm. Well, for the folks that are listening that want to take action right away, would it be okay to give them a website to reference you and maybe some contact information in case they want to follow along a little bit on the web while we talk?
Sure. That'd be great.
Okay. So, let's see. If the website, folks, that would be greatest for ease of opening the door to learning more about Michael's work, http://www.
No, it's not a www site.
Oh, it isn't?
It just begins with home.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Never mind the www, folks. Thank you. So, http://. Home, H-O-M-E, dot earthlink, dot net, /, and then a tilde, that's a little thing that's in the uppercase next to the one on your keyboard, so you folks probably already know that. Home, dot earthlink, dot net, /, and then the tilde symbol, M, Riversong, and
mm-hmm.
that will get you to his website. And how about what is it, the email, if they wanted to email you? It's mriversong, R-I-V-E-R-S-O-N-G, at earthlink.net. Is that correct?
That's correct. And yes, sometimes I do work with people over the internet because it's possible for people to send photos of different areas of a house and then I can and a yard. I ask people to take very specific types of pictures, too. I want them to take pictures of the weeds around their houses. Because you can read that, too.
Okay.
And, yeah, each species has a distinctive type of environmental growing, ideally, and the types of weeds you have around the house can say an awful lot about the soil characteristics and sometimes about what you might call energetic characteristics of a piece of property.
Okay. Oh, and if the listeners wanted to call to get more information, would you like to share a phone, or would it be better to use the email?
Email's always best. I'm a little difficult to reach by phone, but one can always leave messages. And the number is 307-635-0900.
Okay.
When you go up to the websites, you're going to see quite a variety of activities, but they actually all center around one thing, and that's teaching. And that's what I do. And when I go to somebody's house, I'm essentially teaching them how to live in their house.
Okay, sharing information that is not, at this point, common knowledge, but apparently has a lot of common sense. I'm curious to... you were explaining a little bit about that I Ching and tying that in with, I guess, the feng shui and,
mm-hmm.
and some of your work.
The I Ching was the basis of both feng shui and Chinese medical practice, and both developed from there, and that includes acupuncture and the whole diagnostic system that goes with it. Now, that's one level. Another level of feng shui that I find very interesting, because I mentioned three levels, is communication. And in that case I mentioned with the woman with the blown out knees, there the house was constantly communicating, you gotta be afraid.
Yeah.
And a lot of what people do in feng shui practice, other consultants, is actually manipulating the communication elements of a place. Like certain decorations feeling better when they're in certain spots, things like that.
Okay.
And the communication aspect of feng shui is, I think, incredibly important and incredibly workable. That's the neat thing. You get a lot of leverage doing that.
Sure. Okay.
And there one can add one's own religion. So, for example, if someone were Catholic, a picture of Mother Mary at a certain spot in the house would tend to provide much more comfort than it would, say, at some other spot.
Okay.
And then that's plain communication.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some people mistake that for religion, but it's not.
Okay. Yeah, so that's... So when someone is speaking of interior decorating, you actually are taking it to another level of saying about the communication that the house makes to the people who are in it.
Right. And, of course... personally, my favorite people are always those folks who think that ideal interior decorating means having enough room for all the bookshelves you need.
And what's the story with that?
Oh, that's just the way I am. I love books.
Okay, so that's it. All right. So,
and then the third level of feng shui is perhaps the most interesting, because that's actually dealing with natural forces. And that's something I'm endlessly fascinated with, because when you're dealing with natural forces, you're dealing with, of course, electromagnetic energies, pure magnetic fields from the earth, and also types of energy that we literally don't have words for in our culture, in our language.
But in other languages, other cultures, they recognize these energies?
Sometimes. It's a very difficult thing. I'm doing a lot of cross-cultural studies right now to try to dig out some of that type of information. Each area of the world has a particular characteristic that's dominant, and that drives the language and the cultural conceptions of the people living in that area. And if one were to survey all of those characteristics, one could actually gain an understanding of how natural forces are in an interplay with human consciousness anywhere we happen to be.
Oh, okay. And for instance, when you say natural forces, that's like...
Many of these are unnamed. The only one that we know for sure that has a name in our society right now is magnetic fields. But minerals lying underground, they produce a certain type of field. And then flowing underground water, well, that took a lot of research. But in Germany, I got to interview a consultant named Wolfgang Mays, who determined that whenever water is flowing underground at the surface, there is an emission of a small particle called positrons. And that affects health in a big way. As a matter of fact, anyone living over flowing underground water will tend to have cancers much more readily than people living anywhere else.
Now, that underground water, that's more significant than the plumbing in a house, I take it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, although the plumbing in the house can cause problems, too. I've seen cases where the plumbing was literally electrified for one reason or another, usually through poor grounding.
Oh.
And so that's another thing that I take into account when I'm doing a survey. I'll actually take a meter and put it up near an exposed pipe just to see what happens. Most of the time, nothing happens, but when something does, oh boy.
Now someone was telling me that, because it's been a common practice, apparently, to ground the electrical system to the plumbing.
Yeah.
That one of the side effects, and I want to confirm this with you, is that if that's done, the pipes will tend to corrode faster or accumulate a buildup in them.
That can happen. It depends on individual variations in a place. It can depend on, well, those positron emissions I was mentioning coming from the ground. It could also depend on the mineral composition of the soil around the house. These are things that have not been adequately researched. They should be researched.
Yeah, okay.
All of this comes under a whole new heading, and I'm writing a book on this as we speak, and it's called Geobiology.
Okay.
And as it stands now, it's primarily an American discipline. And there are very few practitioners in this country. I learned a lot from one particular guy, the late Vince Weiberg of Los Angeles.
Oh.
He actually had me live at his house for a little while, and wow, did I learn a lot.
Ah, great. Now, is this what is referred to, I've heard the term geopathic stress?
Yes, exactly. That's part of it.
And now there's a term that I have heard that I'm not certain about what it means, ley lines?
Ley lines is a very interesting linguistic construction. And the word lay actually is an ancient word that means line, so you're saying line lines.
Ah.
But as far as I've been able to determine, and this comes from deep study of work by Buckminster Fuller in the book Synergetics, so it's actually a two-volume set, and apparently gravity, the force of gravity that we know of as that, which correlates with the Chinese elemental force known as Earth, the force of gravity forms up with invisible lines that are the structure of a planet or anything that has its own gravity field. I say that because if people are listening to this interview in 10 years or 20 years from now, we may have gravity control vehicles, and that's going to be part of how they work. And so anyway, these invisible lines can be found around the Earth, but right now we don't have any direct way of measuring them. All we can do is use our more refined and more difficultly defined sense apparatus to train ourselves to perceive these things. And it turned out in ancient times people had done this in many cultures around the world in many different ways. And those people were known in Western Europe as geomancers. And they would actually be able to perceive these fields one way or another, and they could tell you, well, build here but not there.
Ah.
Now, sometimes they'd use confirming observations, which I think should be a big part of geobiology practice in particular. Confirming observations include, of course, plant life. They also include where cows like to go. As it turns out, cows are harmonious with humans, so are sheep, to the extent that the places they like to hang out are good for us, too. And
yes.
So when people were taking over a new territory, they would traditionally watch the cows graze for a few months, and then they would build according to that.
Oh, so where the cows like to hang out the most or the sheep like to hang out the most, that's where you'd want to put your home.
Right. And cats are polarized a little bit away from us, so cats can tell us where not to sleep or where not to build.
Ah.
Uh-huh.
Ah.
And then insects are completely opposite polarity to us, at least all the insects that bite and form little welts like ants, all the way up through bees and yellow jackets, things like that. And so where they tend to congregate are really lousy places to build.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So nature gives us some signals, and some of the animals around us can tell. Now, I'm wondering, because many, myself and many of my listeners I know, are in short supply of cows and sheep at this time.
That's unfortunate. Well, dogs are also polarized close to people.
Okay.
So if a dog likes to sleep on your bed, well, that's probably a good sign.
Yes. Ah, okay. All right. So that says where a dog would like to hang out.
Yeah.
In a house, whatever spots that they might like to go. And if likes to sleep on your bed, then you know you've got your bed in a good place, huh?
That's right.
Huh. Okay.
So this is all part of geobiology practice.
Wow. Ah. And see, what I don't think a lot of people may not have realized, because there's so many people that have dogs and cats or just consider either one of them house pets, that you're making a very important distinction that where cats would like to hang out wouldn't be good. For instance, some people have told me that their cats love to sleep on the TV or near the stereo system.
Right. TVs almost always put out a very weak magnetic field. And that's not good for people, but cats kind of like it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting little phenomenon there.
Yeah, all right. So we can use that piece of information, folks, to do some checking. And that's pretty amazing. Well, I'm curious. So you're starting to share some things relating to health here, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, if someone wants to have a survey done of their home, what would happen?
I go in with a computer and a toolbox and set up the computer somewhere, and I have a template that I use because that's very convenient for people, very standardized, and also lets me compare results across a number of different surveys of different places. And with the equipment, I start going around and looking at the standard electromagnetic fields.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay. Had a little beep there.
Hello.
Okay.
And then, anyway,
Hello,
after...
Hello, am I on? Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, we seem to have another person on the line.
Do we have a guest, a visitor?
Yes, I'm just calling in. I'm just listening to your program.
Oh, fabulous. Well, please, did you have a question for Michael?
Well, actually, it was kind of a suggestion. I'm very familiar with the ley lines and geographic stress clearing of properties, of people's properties and so forth. And I've actually been researching that recently, and there's a couple of sites you can check out on that. One of them is a Slim Sperling site that's doing some amazing stuff and giving people practical ways to actually find the ley lines with dowsing and staple them off to actually close them out and correct the balance of the energy of the property.
Yes, I'm very familiar with Mr. Sperling's work. As a matter of fact, I had a feeling his name would come up one way or another in this interview because he has done a tremendous amount of work, and I do highly recommend his work because of that. He really has a knack for teaching dowsing and for using it in his practice. Now, dowsing, I have a little different view of that from most people, because dowsing, I mentioned earlier about training one's sensory apparatus to perceive these different energies, forces, ley lines, whatever you want to call them. And that actually all centers around a particular part of the human body. It's buried deep in the brain. It's called the pineal gland or pineal body, depending on which text you read. And the pineal, it's very interesting. It takes its name from the fact that it's shaped like a pine cone. Now, studying the work of Tom Bearden, and I had a very, very fortuitous advantage in being able to interview him several times back in the 80s, I found out that that little tiny pine cone-shaped thing in the brain is the perfect size and shape to perceive certain types of energies which are as yet not named by standard science. The closest we come is scalar waves, which is a term that many people are uncomfortable with for various reasons. When you train yourself to perceive these, you can do it visually, or you can do it kinesthetically, and that's what dowsing is. It's simply the kinesthetic means of training your senses to perceive these forces.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat thing.
It's
equipment we're all born with.
How do we actually do that?
Pardon?
Well, how do we actually do that? Because, again, something like dowsing, again, is even hard for a lot of people to understand, but there's actually practical applications for it where you can do practicing to get it, where most people that thought dowsing was a joke can actually do it and prove it to themselves that it's useful and it does work. Again, I always tell people these are all external tools. Eventually, we'll get back to how we did it ourselves originally within our own bodies.
Right,
a lot
yeah.
of people need something external first, like Slim Sperling's, you know, devices or Orgon devices or dowsing rods or whatever may be a pendulum. So they have some type of fixation on a material item outside of their body because they just don't believe within themselves they can do it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly what I teach people in my advanced classes. And
well,
I love
I'll let
getting
you go and
advanced
take the call
together.
So in case you have any callers call in, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sure,
thanks for calling.
Well, that's good. So you were mentioning classes. Would you go into that a bit more, Michael, about what you can teach, what's
well,
available?
I love doing classes, and the most frequently given class is basic feng shui. And there I go into the various building shapes, various building layouts, things that people can use right away after the class as to where to put decorations, the communication factors, things like that. And a lot of that is tied up in something that, if you've studied feng shui at all, you've run into something called the bagua, which is an ancient Chinese attachment to the I Ching, which tells you that there are eight particular types of space in a building, and they're in an orderly manner. I happen to like the black hat manner, even though everything else they teach is religious. I've found that to be scientifically valid as far as I can tell. And one, so in my basic class, I teach how to use the bagua to guide how you decorate a house.
Okay.
And then a more advanced course is the geobiology course, and there I teach people how to open up the sensory apparatus and start seeing these forces. And, of course, once you start seeing them, you end up doing what I end up doing most of the time, which is turn it off. Because all that information can drive you batty if you're not careful. There's a lot of information out there.
So you, so a person can learn to use it when they want and turn it off when they don't?
Right. So that's kind of a neat thing. And there, like I say, that's the third level of feng shui because you are dealing directly with natural forces.
All right. And now you were making mention some in this home survey.
Yeah, okay. What happens later in the home survey, I look at the gas pipes, and when I have it available, I run a detector over the pipes to see if there are any leaks, check all the joints and any places that look a little flaky where there might be a pinhole leak in the pipe itself. I examine, just like a normal building inspector would do, like for a real estate transaction, I examine the furnace, air conditioning system, anything like that. And then I examine very carefully, using all of my physical senses, literally. I examine the bathrooms, kitchens, for evidence of mold. Mold is actually the number one health problem I see out there. it's just amazing how pervasive it is now. And that's happened for a number of reasons, because it wasn't that way when I was a child.
Right.
Yeah. And our culture has changed to a point, for various reasons, where people just aren't keeping up with their cleaning.
Oh.
And they're allowing mold to develop, and then they wonder why they get really, really sick with no diagnosis and no chance of improvement. And I have actually, in a few cases, and I don't talk about this much, I've worked with people who've had long-term problems, usually classified as either fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome in the United States. There are other words for it in other countries. And usually these have involved mold in one way or another.
And when you say mold, like where would this typically be showing up? I mean,
any place there's moisture.
Huh?
Any place there's moisture.
Okay.
So if there's a roof leak or pipes where water condenses on them from time to time in a tight space, you'll find mold. I have another memorable case where a fellow, a very rich man, owned three houses, and every time he went to this one particular house, he'd get sick, and he couldn't figure out why. And I kept smelling mold here and there, but I didn't see anything on the main floors. Went down to the basement, and of course there was ductwork coming from that area of the basement to the rest of the house, and there was this large wall, which didn't really have any decoration on it. He'd never used that space very much. And I found inside that wall an ordinary water pipe that had a pinhole leak in it. It had been going for years, and the entire inside of that wall was covered with black mold.
Ooh.
So it can be a real problem. And in that case, the solution was to tear the wall down, fix the pipe, and put up a new wall. Kind of expensive, but thankfully he could afford it.
Yes. Now, what about can ozone or some other things help with that, with mold problems?
That's a matter of experimentation right now. I think it does do some good in some cases. Now, remember, we have on this planet right now more than 250,000 different species of mold.
250,000?
Right. Each one with its own peculiarities. And we're only just beginning to sort that out, figure out what's going on. And we think that some mold spores can be affected by ozone and will be essentially neutralized and become dust. And so for that reason, I will recommend that people use ozone in their houses. However, and I've seen this happen way too many times, people will leave it on 24/7,
uh-huh,
including while they're in the house.
Yeah.
And ozone in and of itself can cause respiratory problems.
Yeah.
So if you're going to use ozone, very, very strong recommendation to turn that thing off when you're in the house and just have it running when you're away.
Okay. Okay.
Now, it doesn't affect everybody, obviously, but there are many people who do get serious respiratory problems from ozone.
Yeah.
But it is one weapon against mold, and really with mold, I'm researching on three levels right now. And the electrical is one of them. I consider ozone essentially an electrical method of attacking mold. I'm very intrigued by a possibility, and I'm putting this out on this broadcast so that maybe some other people will pick up on it and try this out, is to put out radio frequency. It would be in the range from about 1 megahertz to about 300 megahertz. A broadband, in other words, if you had a radio on, no matter what channel you were tuned to, you'd hear it. And just essentially give a few seconds blast into the area and see if that helps with the mold problem. So theoretically, that should work, at least on some species.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But to build the equipment, of course, you need some electronics background. I have enough to be dangerous, but I'm not really set up to build equipment like that. So I'm encouraging people to build these broadband transmitters. the best model of that type of transmitter would probably be the one that Nikola Tesla was using at Wardenclyffe. And I know a guy in Colorado who built a 1/35th scale model of Wardenclyffe, and I think if it were properly grounded and set up in a certain way with certain tunings, it would put out the desired frequencies and could have an effect. But like I say, this is research. We don't know for sure that this is going to work, but we think it should.
Something. Well, is this in the category of gentleman Royal Rife and the Rife generator that figured that there was a vibration to counteract different maladies for the body?
Yes. Royal Rife has been a huge influence on me. I think he did better research than anybody on how electromagnetic frequencies can affect the human body in very subtle and powerful ways.
And of course, his work was about finding frequencies that would help the body to heal. And I've had, of course, some experiences from living for a 7-year period under high-tension power lines.
There's
a lot of the work that I've focused on when people visit advancedliving.com. I'm just wondering, what have you found about electromagnetic fields in modern life, how they affect people?
Well, I've been involved in a number of different cases where that was definitely a big factor. And there are a number of different types of frequencies with different types of effects. One thing is, of course, the pure magnetic field that emanates from a big power line or from what's known as primary, which most people don't even notice, but once you learn to spot them, you'll never forget them. And they run through neighborhoods, and they're actually more of a problem than big power lines, because the big ones, I mean, they're obvious. You know they're there, and you can make your decisions. And about 25% of people are not affected by these fields, which is one reason why the U.S. government-sponsored research into this didn't really come up with any conclusive results.
That's important.
Yeah. Magnetic fields can also come from appliances. The backs of TV sets are a big source of magnetic fields. And you can also get them from refrigerator motors, things like that. They usually fall off after a little distance. Now, there's a couple other classifications of fields that are more problematic. One of those is what's called an electric field. And this is separate from the magnetic field. And I've seen this in surveys in the real world, where you might have a very weak magnetic field, but a very strong electric field. Typically, where I've seen this the most is with metal lamps. So anyone with a beautiful wrought iron antique lamp next to their bed is getting usually doused by this field. And, of course, you also get these electric fields from electric blankets. And I found a way, thanks to training from the International Institute for Biology and Ecology in Clearwater, Florida, and their training, I was able to actually have a person hold the little metal cylinder connected to an electric meter, and then I ground the electric meter, and then I can actually measure the voltage in the human body. And I've seen people lay in the bed with a lamp like that, and the voltage will go up to some high level. Actually, if they're standing out in the middle of a typical American room holding that, they'll have 1.5 volts going through their body.
Mm-hmm.
If they lie down on a waterbed with the heater turned on, typically I've seen about 47 to 50 volts.
Wow.
With the heater turned off, typically 97 volts.
More with the heater off.
Right.
There's
a tricky reason for that, but
the waterbed itself.
Yep.
I know Reverend Hannah Kroger was an advocate of people, if they had a waterbed, get rid of it. If they didn't, don't get one.
Yeah. Oh, I had one for a little while, and it didn't do me that much good. Eventually sold it off.
And I take it that it's not the person's advantage to have more of that voltage flowing through.
Right, yeah. That's been associated primarily with heart and circulation problems.
Hmm. And, there's a lot of that condition in our country.
Yeah, yeah. And electric blankets, of course, are complete no-no. I always recommend electric blankets, even the new modern ones that are supposedly not emanating fields. Well, I'm sorry, but most of those do emanate fields. They're just hidden in various ways through technical modifications.
Oh, wow, okay. So even though it says low EMF, that's still something to be careful of.
It's not necessarily that low.
Okay, well, there was an article back in 93 where they were quoting Russian research that, because typically I think it's been stated that if the electrical field or the magnetic field is less than 1 milligauss or less than 2 milligauss, that was considered safe. And the Russian research on the matter, they indicated that if you wanted to have a safe level, it would be less than 1/1000th of a milligauss.
That's correct. Yeah, the Russians actually are much more advanced in terms of electromagnetic research than we are. And they're so advanced that they actually don't allow microwaves in their country, as I understand it.
Oh, well, they found it useful some years ago to direct at one of our embassies there in Moscow, I think. Where people were mysteriously getting sick.
Yeah, and I've seen that, too, around the Federal Center in Denver, that there's some electromagnetic emanations in that neighborhood that have been somewhat heavy.
Huh.
Same type of thing, and this, I don't think there's a bad intention to it. They figure, well, it works, let's do it. And, of course, this brings us to the next level because we've covered magnetic fields, electric fields. There's another type of field called ionic, which is very difficult to measure, so I won't get into it too far, but
okay,
I see that a lot
in
school.
Before we get to that, I want to remind our listeners, again, of your good contact information. Of Michael Riversong's website, http://, the word home, H-O-M-E, earthlink.net/, and then the symbol, the tilde, which is the capital symbol next to the number one key on a keyboard. And then after the tilde, M. Riversong, R-I-V-E-R-S-O-N-G, emails directed to Michael at mriversong@earthlink.net. And then that phone, that's the 307, what's the rest of that, Michael?
635.
Yes.
0900.
Okay. Very good. 307. And one more time?
307-635.
Yes.
0900.
0900. Okay. Very good. I guess we'll be wrapping up in just a moment. You want to tantalize people with a little something as we prepare to bring our wonderful hour to a close here?
Well, just to complete one thought, the very high-frequency radio fields are very bad for people, and that's what you have inside microwaves, and you have emanating from cell phones and those walk-around remote phones that everybody has now. And those can be a very bad thing. I'm very intrigued by a thing called BioPro lately, and I'm thinking that they may have a good answer to that. So I'm encouraging people to get into BioPro.
I found that if they go to advancedliving.com, there is a link on advancedliving.com to a BioPro site, because that's one of the products that I found helpful and helpful. And have decided to offer that along with some other things for electromagnetic fields and cell phones. So, yeah, I can go with you 100% there, Michael, on finding that that's a good technology.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that company so far. Now, I'm not signed up with them personally because of my status as a consultant. I tend not to sell hard products. The only hard product I sell is my music.
Oh.
And I should mention one little phrase.
Sure.
Music is the fastest way to change an environment. And that was originally a part of ancient feng shui practice. So usually when I go into a house, I will bring a musical instrument, either a flute or a harp, and I'll play a little bit of music in the building. It helps.
Now, some of your music that's available on your website, is this specifically designed for some healing?
Yeah. I have 16 albums currently available on the web.
Okay.
And two of those are especially good for children. That would be Angels in the Attic and Creator's Creatures, which is the most recent album. And then I have one for helping recover from alcoholism. That's Navigators 2. That one's not fully tested, but might help. And then Nature and Celtic Collection, both of those albums are antidepressants. It's almost impossible to be depressed when those are playing.
Ah.
Yeah.
Folks, get ready.
Yeah. And then
I wish we could, I feel like we've just scratched the surface and could talk for hours. We may have to have you back again soon to expand upon more of this. In the meantime, I want to thank you so much for being a guest today and helping to share some important information. Folks, remember, watch where your sheep, cows, or dogs like to sleep. That's the place for you to hang out. It's good energy. And, Michael, you have a wonderful, wonderful day, and thank you for all the work you're doing. We hope many people will be contacting you to improve their lives. And my beloved listeners, I look forward to next week with another wonderful guest to bring you more great information for better living. We thank you, and God bless you, and have a wonderful week.
And thank you very much. It's been a joy talking with you.
Oh, pleasure, Michael. Goodbye for now.
Bye. Let's go out.